Mays also played a role in the city's disintegration. Cahokia represented the first time Indians north of the Rio Grande had tried to feed and shelter 15,000 people in one place, and they made beginner's mistakes. To obtain fuel and construction material and to grow food, they cleared trees and vegetation from the bluffs to the east and planted every inch of arable land. Because the city's numbers kept increasing, the forest could not return. Instead, people kept moving further out to get timber, which then had to be carried considerable distances. Having no beasts of burden, the Cahokians themselves had to do all the carrying. Meanwhile, Woods told me, the city began outstripping its water supply, a somewhat wimpy tributary called Canteen Creek. To solve both of these problems at once, the Cahokians apparently changed its course, which had consequences that they cannot have anticipated. Nowadays, Cahokia Creek, which flows from the north, and Canteen Creek, which flows from the east, join together at a point about a quarter mile northeast of Monk's Mound. On its way to the Mississippi, the combined river then wanders, quite conveniently, within 200 yards of the central plaza. Originally, though, the smaller Canteen Creek alone occupied that channel. Cahokia Creek drained into a lake to the northwest, then went straight to the Mississippi, bypassing Cahokia altogether. Sometime between 1100 and 1200 AD, according to Woods's as yet unpublished research, Cahokia Creek suddenly split in two. One fork continued as before, but the second, larger fork dumped into Canteen Creek. The combined river provided much more water to the city. It was about 70 feet wide. A natural inference, to Woods's way of thinking, is that the city, in a major public works project, intentionally diverted Cahokia Creek into Canteen Creek. In summer, heavy rains lash the Mississippi Valley. With the tree cover stripped from the uplands, rainfall would have sluiced faster and heavier into the creeks, increasing the chance of floods and mudslides. Because the now combined Cahokia and Canteen Creeks carried much more water than had Canteen Creek alone, washouts would have spread more widely across the American bottom than would have been the case if the rivers had been left alone. Beginning in about 1200 AD, according to Woods, Cahokia's maize fields repeatedly flooded, destroying the harvests. The city's problems were not unique. Cahokia's rise coincided with the spread of maize throughout the eastern half of the United States. The Indians who adopted it were setting aside millennia of tradition in favor of a new technology. In the past, they had shaped the landscape mainly with fire. The axe came out only for garden plots of marsh elder and little barley. As maize swept in, Indians burned and cleared thousands of acres of land, mainly in river valleys. As in Cahokia, floods and mudslides rewarded them. How do archaeologists know this? They know it from sudden increases in river sedimentation, coupled with the near disappearance of pollen from bottomland trees in those sediments. Between about 1100 and 1300 AD, cataclysms afflicted Indian settlements from the Hudson Valley to Florida. Apparently, the majority learned from mistakes. After this time, archaeologists don't see this kind of widespread erosion, though they do see lots and lots of maize. A traveler in 1669 reported that 6 square miles of maize typically encircled Haudenosaunee villages. This estimate was roughly corroborated 2 decades later by the Marquis de Denonville, governor of New France, who destroyed the annual harvest of 4 adjacent Haudenosaunee villages to deter future attacks. Denonville reported that he had burned 1.2 million bushels of maize, 42,000 tons. Today, as I mentioned in Chapter 6, Oaxacan farmers typically plant roughly 1.25 to 2.5 acres to harvest a ton of landrace maize.